श्री नवदी प्रदाम की जय, गंगमाई की जय, जमुनमाई की जय, भक्ति देवी की जय, तुलसी देवी की जय, समदेव भक्ति मिल की जय। ओ ग्लोरियस समुद्र भक्ति, ओ ग्लोरियस समुद्र भक्ति, ओ ग्लोरियस समुद्र भक्ति, ओ ग्लोरियस श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग निताय गौर हरि हरि ओम। ओम विष्णु पराय कृष्ण कृष्ण चले श्रीमदी भक्ति परम कृष्ण निताय Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Namaste Saraswati Devi Shakti Devi Tarana. Knows why I say chant louder or louder? What's the secret behind this? Huh? Yeah, when you chant louder you get more attention. But that's not the reason why. It's part of the reason, maybe. Yeah.
It's more likely that it will overcome the mind.
Yeah. Louder implies there's loud, louder, and loudest. So louder is means louder than something. So it's louder than we previously chanted, but it's louder than the mind. Because it's quite amazing how so quickly. Well, say we're listening to the chanting, which is what we're supposed to be doing, and then suddenly the mind isn't there, which practically means that we're not there. We're somewhere else. Although our body is there and perhaps our tongue is chanting, but when the mind isn't there, we're not really there at all. So louder than the mind, which sometimes you have to chant really loud to chant louder than the mind, because the mind is so something very, very intense. It's very flickering. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, manas chanchalam astiram, that the mind is chanchal, always flickering from one thing to the next, and astiram means unsteady. And this basically is the cause on one level of material existence. The unsteady, flickering mind is grasping for something, then grasping for something else, then grasping for something else, holding on so tightly to something as if it's all important, and then just 7 seconds later it's holding on to something else completely. Did anyone have that experience even during the chanting? They're chanting and then suddenly the mind is holding on to something other than the chanting. It's holding on to something we did today or something that you want or something you hate. Icha dvaicha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. Krishna says this attraction and repulsion. Icha means I want. Dvesh means I don't want. So it's the attractions and repulsions, which are specifically the functioning of the mind. Dvandva mohena bharata, this duality of thinking something in the material world is good, and on the other hand, something in the material world is bad, and this is good. And continuously, the mind is accepting and rejecting one thing after the next, holding, grasping, pushing. And while we're chanting, or what to speak of just going about our day. Say if you're going to drive your car from here to there, if you're very familiar with where you're going, All you practically have to do is you set your mind on where you're going, or some part of you, and then you drive there, and you don't think about it, and your mind has the opportunity to wander all over the universe, thinking about this, good things, bad things, round and round, up and down. But as Krishna says, dvandva mohena bharata, thinking. Dvandva means duality, dual. So thinking good and bad in this world is actually the duality that mohena, that deludes one. So louder than, because why is the good and the bad of this world simply a delusion? Is because it's all temporary, and it has nothing to do with us who are eternal. And everyone, even though it's such a radical proposition that we are not the body, we are eternal souls, it's so extreme in one sense. But it's also so obvious in another sense, if we look at it just with a little bit of our intelligence. It's so obvious because everyone, except the youngest of the young in this room, has the experience of being just that big. We don't remember so much, but once we were that big. And then we were, what's your earliest memory? How old were you? First day of school or before? What's your earliest, huh? Is that the earliest memory?
Yes.
How big were you? How old were you?
I was 5.
What? Do you remember what happened?
It wasn't school. It was a kindergarten. So
yeah?
I remember I didn't.
And what happened?
I was anxious for this chocolate egg. You know, there was the surprise inside.
Yeah?
And so I started crying on the way to the garden.
Yeah.
And then my father had to turn the car around to go to the shop to buy a
thing. You won that battle with your father. Yes. You got the egg. But that's how tall were you at that time? How old were you?
1.20 meters.
Well, okay. Put your hand from the ground up. Okay. Now, okay. Keep your hand there and stand up. Wait a second. You didn't grow that fast.
I don't remember.
Of course you don't remember, but... Okay.
Maybe like that.
Yeah, probably. How tall is Gopal? Is he about... Oh, okay. Were you Gopal's age? Or? Okay, Gopal.
Yeah, no, a little more.
You were more, okay. So, were you the same person?
Yes.
It's the same, because ego means sense of identity, the same person. But you've changed in thousands of ways. Your mind has changed, your intelligence has grown, your body has obviously changed. But you are the same person. So what is it that doesn't change through all the changes of mind and body and intelligence? That's the identity. That's who we are. So that's what Krishna explains, one of his first instructions of Bhagavad Gita. Dehenosmen yathadehe komanam jovanam jara. We change. So that's a radical and obvious one, but also it's very radical when you remember what you could do when you were 16 or 20, and then when you're 59, you can't run anymore, you can't jump anymore, and you can't digest what you used to be able to digest, you can't see what you used to be able to see, and you're all wrinkly, but you're the same person, and that's the frustration of getting old, because the person doesn't change, I remain the same and the desires remain the same, but the ability to satisfy the desires lessens continuously. And when you're really old, and when you're old and sick, no one wants to look at you even. No one wants to see you. People get repulsed. People just don't want to see old people because it's frightening for them, because the implications of seeing an old person makes one think about, am I going to be like that? And that's, the famous story of Lord Buddha. When he was born, his father had his horoscope cast, and it said that he was going to be a great renunciant. And the father was a king, so he wanted his son to be a king, a prince and then a king. But a great holy person, a renunciant, he didn't want that, so he tried to mold the child's life or let the child not experience the kind of things that makes someone renounce the world. And what's something that makes one renounce the world? When you see the futility, the uselessness of material endeavor. So he kept the king and the young prince in the palace continuously and got him married at a young age to a very beautiful young princess, and the boy never saw anyone being born, and never saw anyone getting old, and never saw anyone diseased, and he was living in an ideal but illusory world. Ideal but illusory means it's wonderful, except it doesn't have anything to do with reality. And there's a saying that if you fight reality, you will lose 100% of the time, because reality has its way of forcing itself into our life. It has to, because it's reality. So at some point, the young prince went out, and for the first time, he saw a diseased person. Because his father, the king, used to only keep young people around him. He saw an extremely diseased person. He said, "What's that?" And his chariot driver said, "This person is diseased." "Does that happen to everyone?" "Yes, it's unavoidable." And he went, "Oh." And the only way, pretty much, to avoid disease is skip right to death, which isn't a very pleasant alternative. And then he saw someone old. And when you're young, you never really think you're going to get old. You never think it's going to happen. And guess what? It does. I never thought it was going to happen to me. And it's quite shocking, actually. You get old. And your concept, when you ask a 7-year-old boy, "How old is old?" What's the ideal age? They'll say like 12 or something like that, or 9 if they're 7. Something. It's always a little bit older until you hit about 16 or 17. Then when you're 21 or 25, you think the ideal age is 18, or so it starts going down again. But it's never the age that you are. When you think of the ideal age, no one ever says, "Oh, it's the age I am," because no one is actually satisfied being what they are within a material body. But aside from that point, when the young Buddha-to-be saw a dead body, and he asked if that's going to happen to him. He said, "What's that?" And if you've ever seen the difference between an almost dead body and a dead body, an almost dead body means someone who's dying, not in the sense we're all dying, but in the sense that someone's very close to death. There is such a stark difference between someone who is dying, even if they're 2 minutes away or 1 minute away from death, And then, boom! At the moment of death, everything changes. The soul leaves the body. There was one Mataji I was helping while she was dying, and then we thought she was going to leave this world at night. That night, and we stayed, myself and some other devotees, her husband, and stayed with her all night. And then she didn't leave. And the doctor said somewhere between now and 48 hours. So we hadn't slept much. So myself and a few of the other devotees drove home, and then to the temple in Melbourne. And then we got a call from her husband saying she left, she died. So we immediately went back. And this devotee, the husband of the lady who just died, very, very intelligent fellow, he said, "Now I believe." He had been a devotee for so many years, but he said, "Now I believe that the soul is what gives life to the body. And when the soul leaves, it's completely different. It's the soul, because it's that obvious, it's that apparent. The difference between a body that has life in it, life means the soul, and a body, in 1 second it changes. The soul is gone, and the body turns into a lump of wood, not literally a lump of wood, but as lifeless as a lump of wood, as any lifeless as a wall. It's just, it's not there anymore. Nor can the body be beautiful, because the beauty is coming from the soul. So when Buddha saw a dead body, he was shocked. Buddha literally means the intelligent. So he's called Buddha because he was intelligent. Because he gave up his material pursuit, and he left the kingdom, even though he was going to be the king. He left and performed very heavy austerities for years, and then he had his realization about the very nature of the material world. He took it apart, the material world. Buddha never made any statements actually about the existence of God, either positively or negatively. But his conclusion was reality was the opposite of material consciousness, material reality. Actual reality was not this. It was something that was the opposite. So it's true that actual reality is the opposite of what we see if we have material vision. And the cause of that, of the clinging of the soul to the opposite of reality or illusion, is the mind. That's exactly what it is. It's the mind holding on to one thing after the next, despite our experience that there's nothing. Nothing. Even if we wrote down how long do you think it would take you to write down a list of everything that it would take in the material world to make you happy? Of course, this is not a question to ask old people or devotees. I remember years ago there was a president of India, Moraji Desai, who took over when Indira Gandhi got thrown in jail in the 70s. And then he lived to a very ripe old age of 95 perhaps, or 98 even, but he didn't make it to 100. But they interviewed him when he was 98 and asked him, "What do you want?" And you know, the reporter was trying to get the answer out of him. He was 98. He was trying to get the answer. I want to live to be 100. I assume that's the answer he would have liked. But he said, I don't want anything. I don't want anything. I don't want to save the world. I don't want to help the world. I don't want anything. He was just sort of, it's a soul stuck in a body that's no longer, practically speaking, useful at all. So unless we advance spiritually, it's very extremely frustrating when we become old, because the body is the vehicle, yantra rudani maya. It's the vehicle by which the mind exploits the material world. Through the mind, or through the body, the mind, when it grasps on an object that it holds on to for enjoyment, that this is, yes, this will bring me pleasure. It enjoys through the body. And advertising in their clever psychological way, they take advantage of this, because, like, as the Bhagavad Gita explains, jayato visaya pungsan, sangas te sobha jayate, that if you contemplate something, if you contemplate, if you focus your mind on something, attachment develops. So the advertising industry is just based on this one thing, exposure to, in a favorable way, so that people will focus their mind on some object, whether they want it or not, whether they need it or not. Actually, if they focus their mind on it by having it forcibly, practically speaking, placed within the consciousness through the eyes or the hearing or the combination of both, or some catchy phrase or some beautiful people, then attachment develops. And when attachment develops, then you want, the mind wants it. I want it. I want it. And when do I want it? Yes, of course. What else? I want it now. I want it now. So that's the business of the mind. And when we ask the mind, my dear mind, now it's time to focus your mind on something spiritual, like chanting Hare Krishna, the mind's tendency is to think about everything else. Or not everything else, but anything else. And it will jump from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And people don't even know that they have trouble controlling their mind, or don't even know, practically speaking, that they even have minds, until they try to do something like that, like focus your mind on enchanting Hare Krishna. Then suddenly you realize, what's going on here? You realize you can't even do it. You can't even, because the mind is so agitated and disturbed and flickering, manas chanchanam astiram, it becomes so difficult. And it's not that one is happy with a jumping mind. A jumping mind means it's always jumping, so whatever it has, it wants something else. However old you are, you want to be a different age. Whatever you have, you want something else. With the dream, with the hope that it's going to bring happiness. And the happiness is the anticipation. But there's actually no substantive happiness in the material experience. And if one actually can accept this point, that no matter how long my list is, and no matter if I fulfill it, every bit of my list of everything I think I need that's going to make me happy, If one actually deeply understands that it won't make me happy, that there's no possibility of me attaining happiness through acquiring matter, because I'm substantially different, in substance different, I'm a soul. But even if one doesn't even understand one's a soul, quite understand that, but understands that no configuration of the material world can actually make me happy. Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said that if one understands that, one has taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. Because he can go forward. Instead of going forward and then going back, maybe if I would have done this, and maybe if I had that, and only if this hadn't happened, going back, and only if I would have bought that or sold that. Because then we take steps forward, and then we're always running back to fix up what we could have done, what we should have done. But for one who understands that no matter what has happened to me, it's happened. No matter what experiences I've had them. And even if it was shifted completely in what I'm imagining an ideal way would be, then still I wouldn't be happy. Any more, just recently in Australia, the richest Australian just died. Did he die a happy man? Does anyone die a happy person? No. And someone, maybe I won't say the devotee's name, but he told me a story. He's a very, very pious person. This is on the other hand. What do you think a person who has $7 billion, when he's dying, first of all, it said that he died in his wife's arms and with his family members around him. So first of all, when you're dying like that, what are you thinking? Huh? I'm sorry? What will happen to my money? Is this my son, you know, who's taking over? Is he going to take care of it properly? And all my enemies, are they going like that? And just like anxiety, so much, what's going to happen to this and how bad? And there's maybe a business deal that's going on, and maybe I'm going to, you know, it's and you're dying, but you can't help it because your whole life has been spent with cultivating these type of attachments. And you're also wondering, because all the people around you, they're crying, and you know, everyone's crying, and you're also, and what are they thinking? you know, we don't want to be overly cynical, but but naturally, people are thinking, what percentage? What happens? What about the will? And how much am I going to get? And it's crying, and they're crying, and you feel bad that they're crying, or you feel that maybe they don't even care about me, or you don't even, you know, so many different thoughts, and you're in so much pain, and you don't want to leave because you haven't finished this business deal and you could have done that, and your empire is growing, you don't want to leave, and you're being forcibly pulled out, kicked out. How, and pain at the same time, incredible pain, except they give you morphine to make your brain very dull. I heard Prabhupada say on a lecture just this yesterday that opium, if you take a certain amount, it's a poison, it's a deadly poison. And Prabhupada, when in his adult years, he worked as a chemist. So he said, opium is a poison. So all these drugs. They're poisonous. Actually, it's feeding poison into the system. And it dulls the consciousness so much so that you don't experience anything at death on one level. So much pain. But then, so that's one type of a person leaving this world. Of course, we don't really know what happened while he was leaving, or what kind of a person he really was. This is just a superficial speaking about it. But this one devotee told me about his great-grandmother, who was very, very pious devotee. And so how many years ago, you usually say the person's about 40, how many years ago his great-grandmother's, a few generations back, that was, how many years ago, approximately? Maybe his father was just a boy. His father's maybe 80 years ago, we'll just say, for example, or 100 years ago or something. So she was a very, very, from what he told me, she was very spiritually inclined devotee, and she used to say, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, all the time. Probably none of our grandmothers used to say, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. That's how she would greet everyone, and that's what she would say. So, and every morning she would wake up early and take her bath in the nearby river, and she'd come and chant and read holy books first thing in the morning. And then one day, this is what he told me, she gathered the family members and said, put a white cloth on the ground over here, and I'm going to lie on this, and everyone stay around me and chant Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, chant the names of Krishna. And it was clear what that meant, what was going to happen. And the boys' uncle, excuse me, the devotee's uncle, he wasn't born yet, the devotee wasn't born yet, but his uncle was a young boy, his father's brother was a young boy, and he also understood what was going to happen, so he started crying. She was lying down and everyone was saying Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, and he started crying, the boy started crying, because he had a very, very intimate and loving relationship with his grandmother. And he started crying. And the grandmother said, take him away immediately. Take him out of the room. Because if he's crying like that, I'm going to feel so terribly. And I'm going to want to solace him and take care of him. And I'm going to have to take another birth just to do that. So take him out of the room. Another similar story, not similar but on a completely different level, that's a really unique one. How could she be so detached on one level? So detached. And on the other level, so attached to Krishna, to Radhe Shyam. It's very, very rare in this world. And there was another, I don't mean to make this a morbid night talking about everyone who's dying, but that was glorious. That's not sad. That's actually glorious. Because such a person it's going to happen to everyone. Everyone, it's going to happen to. But her mind was so composed that and so much under her control that it was focused on Krishna. She wanted to keep it that way. That's so exalted. And a more contemporary story, was one disciple of Srila Prabhupada that Jagatini Mataji took care of, and she had cancer, very strong person. She was a book distributor for many years in the United States, and she got cancer while she was quite young, and she was dying, and it was, of course, it's a great struggle. But within the last few days before she left, it took her more or less to the last 3 or 4 days before she died, before she actually came to terms with the fact that she was dying and leaving this world, and there was nothing either she or anyone else could do about it. And she just accepted it and placed herself in Krishna's hands at that point. And when that happens to a person, they become peaceful. They become at peace with Krishna. They become at peace with everything. But this lady, just within the last day or two before she was going to, before she actually died, while Jagatini was taking care of her, she said, she saw that one time she was thinking about something, and then she said, "No, it's not worth it." So Jagatini asked her, "What were you thinking about?" And she said, "I haven't eaten, because I haven't eaten for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I really wanted to have some avocado spread with sour cream." And because she used to live in Los Angeles, and she said, and there's a devotee restaurant right across the street from the temple, Govinda's, and I was just wishing I could go there and have some nachos with avocado spread and sour cream. And then I thought, no, it's not worth it. Because if that's what I want, again, the same point, then I'm going to have to take birth again in the material world just to satisfy my tongue. And really, the correct conclusion is that indeed it is not worth it. It is not worth it. Because no matter how much pleasure we get in the material world out of anything, the suffering is so much more. And it's temporary too. So the real art of living, what to speak of the art of dying, is to somehow or another become attached to things beyond the temporary, and ultimately, of course, to become attached to Krishna. To become attached and attracted to Krishna is the purpose of life. And to do that, we can't be attached to those things of this world for the purpose of enjoyment, because the two simply do not go together. Because one, attachment to Krishna is in the mood of service and love, and attachment for the things of this world is in the mood of exploitation and enjoyment. With me as the center. An attachment to Krishna really only manifests when we accept that, yes, in fact, Krishna is the center, and my happiness is to serve Him. Accept and live in that reality with devotion, not resentment, but devotion. Because after all, Krishna is wonderful, all wonderful. So by chanting Hare Krishna, when we chant properly, which means with devotion, or at least placing our mind on the mantra, then there are many effects. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listed 7 effects. Chaito Darpana Marjanam. The first effect is the cleansing of the heart, of the consciousness. Chaitanya means consciousness. Darpana means mirror. Cleansing the mirror of the mind. of the consciousness, getting rid, cleansing it, because the example of a mirror is given because if we look in a mirror, we naturally expect to see ourselves, who we are, ourselves. You look in the mirror and yeah, that's me. But if the mirror has an extremely thick covering of dust on it from just having, just being left in any dusty old place for a long time, then you look in the mirror and you just see the dust. You don't see yourself at all. You see dust and dust only. So there's no experience of the self if the mirror is covered with dust. And the dust is the so many material desires, basically. So the more material desires that we've accumulated for birth after birth, I want this and I'm not happy, so therefore I want that and I want that. And if you ever make a list of whatever you want, you find that you can't get the things and have an empty list. Does anyone have that experience with their shopping lists? You know, you may list 5 things if this is what I need, but it's never that you get those and you're left with an empty list. Because the attempt to satisfy material desires on the material level, rather than decreasing and satisfying the desires, the result is an increasing of the number of desires. So those desires, the accumulation of desires, are the dust covering the mirror of the consciousness and disallowing us from actually perceiving ourself in its true nature. So the first result of chanting Hare Krishna properly, attentively, is chaita-dorpana-marjanam, the cleansing of the mirror of the consciousness. And then bhava maha devagni navapanam. That means that the forest fire of material life, the conflagration of material life, is extinguished. Material life is considered a forest fire because it's the very nature of the material world to burn us, to scorch us, to scald us, to fry us, to cook us, and ultimately to destroy us. Like if there are animals caught in a forest fire, unless they are birds or they're very swift at running in the opposite direction, they must die. There is no escape. So similarly, there is no escape from the rawness of material reality, that in 100 years from now, there's not a, probably speaking, unless Yudhisthira will live to be like 250 or something, but there's no one who will be in the same body. So that forest fire of material reality that burns is extinguished by chanting Hare Krishna, and that's the second result. And the third result of chanting the holy names is Shayakaraiva Chandrika Vataranam, that the white lotus of our spirit, of our good fortune, grows. As the Chandrika, the moonlight, makes the lotus grow. Similarly, our spiritual life grows as we chant Hare Krishna, and our great, great fortune grows as we, and ultimately it blossoms into a full understanding and living in our spiritual identity in relationship with Krishna. I've already been speaking a long time, haven't I? But these are the, and there are four more as the primary results of chanting Hare Krishna, and they go up to Cheto Dvapanam Arjunam, Bhava Mahadavagni Navapanam, Sriyakarayva Chandrika, Vitaranam, Vidyuvaro Jivanam. That transcendental knowledge automatically comes, naturally comes. Anandam Bhuti Varadhanam. It's an ever-expanding ocean of bliss. Patipatam Pona Amrita Swadhanam. It is the complete nectar that everyone longs for. The soul is longing for satisfaction on the deepest level, nectarian satisfaction, eternal satisfaction. And chanting Hare Krishna bestows, allows one to swim in that ocean of unlimitedly large ocean of ecstasy. Anandam buddhi varadhanam pratipatam punam asvasadhanam sarvatma snapanam. It's like the soul bathing in nectar. What a concept, what a metaphor. It's a bathing of the soul in nectar. Of the consciousness and nectar. And the more pure the consciousness becomes, and the more the lotus of our spiritual life develops, the more one can experience it like this. So therefore, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana, Mahaprabhu says that this is the victory of the holy names over the material world, these results. So we try to chant properly, attentively, and the mind tends to be grasping onto something else in the material world. It's something else and something else, and jumping from thing to thing. And we should learn gradually how to hold on in a very simple way to the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Okay. Any questions or comments? How did you do with your chanting? Because we spoke about that. Anyone tried to listen? Who said yes? Yes. How did you do? Yeah? How? Was it different from your usual experience of chanting? Did you succeed in listening some of the time?
Sometimes.
But you tried all the time? Very good. Keep trying to listen. Yeah. Everything will come from that. Who else tried? Yeah.
Mother.
Yeah. Different than just letting your mind travel, isn't it?
Something travel.
Yeah.
Not travel.
Yeah.
But I believe more.
More?
Oh.
Yes. How nice. How nice. Did you listen to one mantra? At least?
Yes.
Very good. What an... Yeah, a feeling of hope. Our hope is in the holy names. Did you try? Anything you'd like to share about that? But the simple way to do it is just remember what you're doing. It's just trying to listen to one mantra, the one that you're chanting right now. You may be successful, the mind may be too strong, but just try and listen to the one mantra. And if you're successful, very good. You've done it. And if you're not successful, well, try the next mantra. And don't worry about it. Just try to listen to the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Did you try?
Yes.
able to listen? Did you try to listen to one mantra? Did you try?
I succeeded in the beginning, but then I remembered the Prabhupada just that total thinking only about.
Anyone else like to say how their chanting went? If they tried? It's hard to hear because of the...
Less forceful.
Was it more difficult or more easy? More period times of attentiveness. Were you able to hear the Maha Mantra sometimes? Did that? Yeah. Only good can come from hearing the Maha Mantra. Okay. How did you do?
I got better. More than the usual.
Yes.
It took me an extra hour to do.
Yes.
I think it's. Not because I'm saying it's slow,
but I have another extra mantra to say. In the beginning of each mantra,
I'll say.
Oh. So you don't have to say that. But it seems to me.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but you're just getting attentive. Yeah. But you won't have to do that forever. Yes, that's what I've seen. But the mind just—the mind is such an interesting creature that it seems to be so powerful. But then, if it just becomes in the habit of listening to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then it just does that very naturally and simply, and then the effects are perfect or wonderful.
Actually, in one of the times, I remember, I felt something that usually I don't feel while I'm chanting, something very simple, while I'm hearing the words, just seeing.
Yeah, the mind is becoming purified. Chaito Dharpada Mantra. Please continue. Please continue. Everyone, please continue. Anyone else want to? You didn't try. Because you weren't here yesterday. No, because you weren't here yesterday.
No, but I wanted to ask you if you talk about listening. What about seeing?
About seeing?
Seeing.
But the main thing is listening. What will you see?
That is the question. Because I keep seeing.
What do you see?
I keep forcing myself to see.
Yeah. The main thing is to listen to the Hare Krishna mantra and to focus the ears. Not the ears, literally the ears, but focus the attention on the sound vibration of Krishna's name. And from that, then our great teachers, Jiva Goswami, has explained that from that you will see the form of Krishna. And completely naturally, you'll see Krishna. And then from that, and this is by chanting, you'll see first the name, then the form, then the qualities of Krishna, all his incredibly opulent qualities, and then finally the activities and pastimes of Krishna. All this comes from chanting the holy names. So that's the recommendation, is to be attentive. Attentive and listen. But and if you see, never mind, it's okay. It's wonderful. But put your concentration on trying to, or your endeavor into trying to hear. Is that okay? Why don't we have a little bit of practice? How did you do? Did you remember to try?
Yes. It was more difficult.
Why was it more difficult?
Because usually I don't listen so much, actually. I really saw how much I don't listen.
Yeah, that's the first step. When the light goes on in a dirty room, the first thing is a shock when you see how dirty it is. As long as there's no light on, you can imagine that everything is wonderful. And then you realize, when you try to do this, that, oh, what a mind I have, as if you didn't realize that before. But, oh, this mind is like a wild horse. Or a wild horse mixed with a wild monkey mixed with all the rest. But this is the simple medicine to tame the wild horse of the mind. Is just listen and don't try to do anything else. Just try and keep it really simple. Then if the issue is simple, I'm going to listen to this mantra, I'm chanting it. If the issue is simple and you keep bringing it back to that simple thing, then it can be done. If it becomes complicated, you can't do it. From my experience, that's what I've seen. Why don't we try a little bit of chanting, and we'll just do one mantra first. Make it three mantras first. And remember what we're going to do at this time. Just simply try and hear each and every word. And the most, if you want to hear each and every word, the most important word to hear is the first one. Because if you don't hear the first one, there's no question of hearing each and every word. And the first one is Hari. So start your hearing from Hari. But if you don't hear the first one, then just try to get your mind on hearing. And it usually takes the mind a little bit of time to quiet down, I've seen. But we'll try three mantras and see how we go. But first, before we start, try to remember what the issue is, what we're going to do. We're trying to just simply listen. Very, very simple. You ready? Everyone should listen except Venu Gita. She shouldn't listen. Okay? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, stop. Very simple. How did you do? Anyone? Huh? Use the. Yes, yes. You say, hey. That's what the mind goes, hey, you're starting to listen. You're getting really good at this. I bet no one else is doing as well as you are. And then the mind starts, just finds one little way out and it. And you have to just recognize and say, no, 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 no.
Huh?
Yeah. How did you do? Did you listen to one word?
Yeah.
Very good. How did you do? Good. same. You're so steady. It's wonderful.
It's hard to find a person so steady.
No.
Not so good.
But
so bent.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. But a nice platform to get to listen all the time. Anyone else like to say? How do you do, Alokika? Huh? Okay. Too shy to. Yeah.
What if we have anxiety, our mind is anxiety about, let's say, some service? So what then?
Nothing. Just don't say yes, yes, yes. But now let me listen. I'll give yourself permission to be in complete anxiety about it later. But now just listen. Just listen now. That purifies the consciousness. And if you want to think about the solution, then think about it later. Or chant later. But while you're chanting, it's best to make the endeavor to listen. Don't use the Maha Mantra to get good ideas. Huh?
Can you think of good mantras for Sankirtan?
When we chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we should listen. Let's try it again. After all, I may speed up a little bit. It's the same thing. Just try and listen. Don't think about Sankirtan. Don't think about this. Don't think about that. Don't think about how well you're doing. These are just the mind's tricks to stop you from simply listening to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You ready for the battle? It doesn't have to be a battle, actually, because what I've seen from my experience is that the mind at some point, it just gets really simple and just wants to hear the Maha Mantra. But if you allow the mind to speed up by thinking of so many things, it just becomes impossible to listen. So just understand what the issue is. The issue is to be attentive. Okay? Just for a few mantras, you can do it. But it sounds so simple in one sense, you know, to make such a big deal out of something so simple, it almost appears peculiar, but it isn't simple. Because the mind is wild. And it is the thing that keeps one in the material world. You should know that. Bandurat matmanastasya manad evat manajita natmanastu shatruve. If it becomes uncontrolled, it becomes your enemy. Okay, let's try. Now, remember what we're going to do right now. How did you do with that one, Vyas? Pru? Excuse me? Yeah. I also take off my glasses when I chant. I do too. Okay, ready? Remember what we're going to do? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari.
Did your mind try to escape and find some little hole to go through and try to get out? Yes? And you know what you have to do? Just say, not now. Now we listen. But don't say that. Just do it. Because as soon as you say, now I should listen, they'll say, why? You can listen later. And then you're in a big conversation with yourself, which is sort of an insanity. But it's just, you know, so it's tricky. But it will get very simple if you just remember the one thing. Try and listen.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
If any of you like challenges, this is the challenge of life. And if you can control the mind, you've done something wonderful. And even what I was chanting then, what I saw, sometimes I started thinking about, oh, what am I going to say next, and things like that. And I lost one mantra, a mantra and a half. But then I saw that I could go back to chanting if I didn't fall into that. I could go back to actually hearing. So if you miss a mantra, and I missed the whole, more than one mantra, the whole thing. Even if you miss one, it doesn't make any difference. Don't worry about it. Because your freedom isn't to capture the past. Your freedom is to just listen right now, to do the right thing now. Okay, we'll stop here. Yeah?
Did it say then also recommended to use breathing exercises from Hatha Yoga for increasing the possibility to concentrate?
Because breathing exercises, the purpose of any breathing exercise, which they're all based, the Buddhists use breathing exercises, Vipassana, meditation, and they're all based on pranayama. And the purpose of pranayama is to cool the mind down. So some people do that. You know, they just take a few breaths. If the mind is excited, breathing in and out a few times can be helpful. But this is the essence of the whole thing. So if you want to breathe in and out a few times before you start the chant, fine. But the essence is this, and this will give life to the chanting, rather than having the mind simply wander, and then you wonder, why don't I make any advancement? But if you hear the mantra, and all it takes is this. This is a very direct process to get to the actual problem. And the problem is, first of all, that we forget what we're trying to be doing. We're trying to simply listen. That's the essence of the problem. And then the other problem is that the mind doesn't want to, it wants to be wild and out of control. So those things can help, but the essence is just, I'm going to do it. And then gradually the mind, if you keep trying, by Krishna's grace, the mind will actually become very quiet. very quiet. Krishna willing, we shall continue with this topic tomorrow. But please try in your japa tomorrow to listen. Do you chant every day? Yeah. Oh, how wonderful. Yeah. I'm Burjan. What's your name?
Ted.
Nice to meet you. How is it? How long have you been chanting?
I know Nanda has been around for about 15 years now.
Oh, quite a while. Old friend?
Yeah, but I live now in Amsterdam.
Oh. And you work with the airlines?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Gunavatar told me that you were someone who is going to fly in or something like that. So you flew.
Yeah, I arrived on Thursday and emailed Thursday to Friday when I paid a visit to my parents so they could get off my back.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes with the chanting you need to do that. You know, you want to listen, and then you have something very pressing to do. So instead of fighting the mind in that way, sometimes you just do it and get it done with, and then you can. It's easy to be attentive. Easy. Yes.
Yes. Because if you do it on the same time, the day.